The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from Carter Subaru Studio, welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Welcome to this Thursday afternoon edition of The Dory Monson Show. I'm counting on you, wherever you are this afternoon, to shoot me a text and let me know if the snow has begun. Sounds like most of it is going to be in the South Sound area. But wherever you are, give me an update at 98973. We'll let everybody know what's going on. Andrew, what's the story in downtown Seattle right now?
So,
got any snow there yet?
I'm looking out my window right now. I'm leaning away. We got some really small flurries, mostly getting blown around a lot. Noticeable, okay. Though. A couple big flakes here and there. I haven't looked to see if it's sticking. I'll take a look right now.
Okay. Nicole, how about up in Everett? We got any snow up there so far today?
Nope, none.
You sound very disappointed when you say that.
No. Sad. I'm trying to fly tomorrow. I'm crossing my fingers for no snow until after I leave.
Okay. And I'm right in between downtown and Everett, and it doesn't look like we're going to get any snow. It's 36 degrees right now in the north suburbs, but I don't see any precip for the rest of today. They're saying we could get 70% chance on Saturday, but not expecting too much today and tomorrow. But we want to keep an eye on it for everybody, so send us a text if you are in the middle of Snowpocalypse 21. Man, I was thinking something this morning because a bunch of school districts announced that they're going to keep doing the remote schooling today, even if the snow hits. I know Seattle said that and a few other districts. I don't know if any have closed down because of the snow. But this remote learning, among all of its other faults, and there are plenty of other faults, the kids aren't learning, it's a depressing atmosphere, there's no socialization going on, but taking away one of the greatest thrills of childhood, which is the possibility of a snow day, you get that forecast the night before, and then you can't wait. And back then, back when I was a kid, when we didn't have the internet or weather forecasts on our phone, you would wait until the 11 o'clock news, and they'd have a scroll at the bottom that would say if districts had already canceled school. And usually they didn't the night before. So then you'd wake up early in the morning and turn on the TV and watch the scroll. Cairo Radio was also a huge source. Back in the day when Bill Yend was our morning anchor and everybody would tune in to Cairo and they would do all school closure reports. You don't have to do that anymore because, like I said, people get notices via email and text and from the district. They call people. So it's not as critical anymore to get that word out. But I'm sad. I'm disappointed for the kids who don't get the pure thrill of seeing if school's going to be canceled because the snow days are no more during remote learning. Okay, we'll keep an eye on all of this throughout the afternoon. As I said, text me at 98973. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
Two nights ago, there was a shooting in Seattle. A black man, and race is important. That's why we're saying it. It always is in police-involved shootings these days. A black man walked up to a car that two young women were sitting in, and he opened fire. Now, as of now, police think it was just a random shooting. One of the women was killed on her way to Harborview. The other one was not quite as seriously injured, although she was seriously injured, but she was at least able to call 911.
911, what is your emergency?
My friend just got shot. Me and my friend just got shot. I don't know where we are. We just got shot like three times.
Gotcha. What,
I can't even hear my
ear. Do you know like a cross street or where you're at?
No, I don't know where I am. My friend is dying. She got shot in the face. Please come.
I'm getting the medics on the line. One moment.
She's dying. She's dying.
I understand. I heard you. I heard you.
Please come. She's dying.
Seattle Fire and Medic 1.
Bro, my friend is dying. My friend, we just got shot like 3 times. Please send paramedics right now.
You just got shot 3 times?
3 times.
Where are you at?
Hey, Fire, this is radio. I've got a rapid SOS location of 2300 South Massachusetts.
I don't have a location. Someone just got
it. Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. 2300 South Massachusetts.
Come here, please.
Okay, ma'am. I need you to answer my questions. What's going on there?
They're shooting. Come now, please. We just got shot. I'm gonna die. We're gonna die.
How many people have been shot?
Two. Please come now. My friend is dying.
Okay, so the police did respond quickly. The friend did pass away. And when officers arrived, they saw the suspect. And it was a young black man, and he's walking, clearly has the gun in his right hand. And as you're about to hear, this is from police body cam footage. The police are shouting at him to drop the gun, drop the gun. And then you clearly see the guy raise up his gun and level it toward the cops in a shooting position. And that's when the cops opened fire and killed the suspect.
He's coming down.
Drop the gun!
Put your hands up and drop the gun, Seattle Police!
Drop the gun now!
Then right here, you hear the panic in the cop's voice, because right here, the guy raises up the gun, levels it at the cops.
Ow! Drop the gun!
Suspect down.
So the cops shot and killed the suspect in that case. Now, that has, bizarrely, if you've watched the video, I don't know what the cops were supposed to do. When somebody levels a gun at them, the cops are trying to protect their life. But you do wonder what goes through a police officer's mind, because they know that there have been so many shooting incidents, even justified shootings, that have led to rioting and absolute witch hunts against the police officers. And we're already starting to see that. There were some tweets going out last night as there was a push for rallies and some destruction in Seattle last night. The shooting was 2 nights ago, to protest the police shooting this black man. And what some of the people were saying just didn't make a lot of sense. One of the widely circulated tweets said, plenty of white people get taken in alive after recklessly firing guns and worse. For a black man to be shot in the chest by police in front of an African-American museum during Black History Month was absolutely avoidable. So I don't know what the suggestion is there. This was very near the Jimi Hendrix Museum down there. And yes, it is Black History Month. I don't know that cops have the luxury of checking a calendar when they're making life or death decisions, nor do I think they can check to see what landmarks are nearby. And I don't understand the relevancy of this shooting being criticized in part because it was at the Jimi Hendrix Museum during Black History Month. But again, last night there was people who were destroying neighborhoods. This is video from Katie Davis Court, who comes on our show often. She posted this. And these are residents in the neighborhood who are furious at the protesters who were coming through the neighborhood just destroying things last night.
You're a politician. Gorgeous. Gorgeous. Another politician.
Not a poverty.
You're taking advantage of the death of a black man.
Good for you.
Okay, the neighbor is calling the people who are rioting, destroying things, opportunistic. that they are using this police shooting as their pretense for going into this neighborhood and just destroying stuff. And so I don't know how this will evolve. Again, if you watch the video, and the Seattle police released it right away, if you watch the video, you know that this guy just shot two young women, murdering one of them. You know that the guy's walking with a gun. Police are shouting at him to put down the gun, and then he lifts it up in a shooting position toward the cops. I truly don't know what else the cops are supposed to do. They can't let the guy shoot them. So we'll see if this gets turned into an incident of nightly rioting in Seattle. Like I said, there was last night some rioting, but we'll see if this is a tough one to make out to be a unjustifiable shooting, because they have so much body cam footage and you see the guy had his gun pointed at the police officers. But that has not stopped the sort of rioting in other cities in the past year, even when there is video that shows a shoot is justified. So we'll see. We'll see what happens in the days to come, and we'll be watching it very closely. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I told you so.
Oh, it's a big old fat I told you so, because it was many years ago I told you that right around the year 2020, Seattle was going to start tolling every road in the region. And again, people accused me of hyperbole. What do you mean tolling every road? You mean tolling the freeways going into downtown, tolling new bridges? No, tolling every inch of every road. And they have taken another huge step in that direction as they, yesterday in the legislature, they got a presentation by the State Transportation Commission that wants to make every road a toll road. And what it means is, right now they're going to start charging you, if they get their way, 2.4 cents per mile. And the way they're going to do it, you're either going to have to put a transponder in your car so government can track every inch you travel, or you have to go to like a Department of Licensing type place and have them read your odometer every quarter. Oh, that sounds efficient. Going to a government agency four times a year. If you remember the vehicle emission places, if you remember trying to renew your driver's license, you know how horribly efficient those government-run operations are. So those would be your choices. I continue to believe that we need to stand up and keep this from happening, because what's going to happen is, as soon as they get a transponder in everyone's car, they are going to start what they call a variable usage charge. And instead of a flat 2.4 cents per mile, they might charge you $25 to drive into downtown Seattle during morning and afternoon rush hour. They may charge you $12 to go into Everett and Tacoma. Maybe it's 50 cents to take your kids to school in your vehicle. Maybe it's the same, 50 cents to go to your local grocery store. But the goal is, of course, to get more money. They're trying to sell this as revenue neutral, but at the same time that they're proposing a per mile tax, they're also proposing a massive increase in the gas tax. And so they're talking about the gas tax, adding as much as a dollar a gallon to the gas tax, through the carbon tax and the gas tax increase and the federal gas tax increase. You can see gas go up $1 a gallon. And then at the same time, they're saying, oh yeah, and let's also tax people per mile. Now, what's horrible about this per mile is, you know, there are a lot of people who have been able to transition to working from home. I'm one of them. This wouldn't affect me much. I hardly ever drive anymore. I used to drive probably 12,000 miles a year, average, for somebody around here. I've probably driven 1,000 miles in the last year without work commutes and not going out as much, nearly as much as in the past. This one cost me almost nothing, a per-mile tax. That's not why I'm fighting it. I'm fighting it because I don't want a transponder in my car. If Jay Inslee, if this is his final term as governor, and somebody like Bob Ferguson, the most dangerous politician in our state's history, if Bob Ferguson becomes governor, you don't think that he would use your vehicle transponder information as a weapon against the people who don't think like him? Whew. I do not want to give government that kind of power and insight and control over my life. Do you? So let me know what you think about the per mile charge, and I'll stay on top of this one too, because it's coming. Sure as we predicted it. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. That is your big lead for today.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
Okay, let me know what's going on. If it's snowing in your neck of the woods, you can text me on that as well. Also, 98973. I'm going to sort through those. Hey, yesterday, speaking of Bob Ferguson, he levied one of the biggest fines for the offense in our state's history against Tim Iman, the initiative tax-fighting activist. Tim Iman will join me next. See what he's going to do now that Bob Ferguson has tried to find him out of existence. That's coming up right after the news here on the Dory Monson Show. For more than 20 years, Tim Iman has been leading anti-tax initiatives in the state, and politicians don't like their lifeblood being cut off. For many years, he has been pursued by Attorney General Bob Ferguson. In fact, I said yesterday that Tim Iman was Moby Dick to Bob Ferguson's Captain Ahab, but I don't know if Tim would like that characterization. He joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Are you Moby Dick, Tim?
I guess I've been called so much worse. I'll go with the whale metaphor, sure.
Okay. I think a lot of people would leave the Moby part out of it, but I won't.
Good for you. Yeah, oh, I love that one. That's great.
Okay, so what was the judge's ruling yesterday?
It was a rubber stamp of what the AG wanted. So $2.6 million worth of fines. You know, why not make it $80 million? I don't have it. I lost everything just getting to court. Lifetime ban on any kind of significant participation in a political action committee, and that I'm declared a PAC, and Tim is a PAC personally, which is the first time in human history a person has been declared a PAC. And so that one's, the last two are really weird.
Let me make sure I understand this. So they said that you cannot have financial control of future initiative campaigns. Does that preclude you from being the front person, from being the face of future political campaigns if somebody else is controlling the purse strings?
Well, I mean, for the last 18 years, I've not had financial control of any committee that I've ever had because of a previous agreement that we had where we have a treasurer, we have other officers, they handle all the finances and stuff. I just need to make sure that the other guys on my committee, Larry Jensen from Mount Vernon and Sid Mieto from Snohomish, they're going to handle all that stuff, but I'm allowed to co-sponsor the initiatives, and so I'm the co-sponsor of the No Income Tax Initiative and the No Carbon Tax Initiative along with the two of them, and so we will continue to promote these initiatives and push these initiatives, but when it comes to requesting money, those requests will come from the other guys.
Okay, but so you still are planning on being actively involved in tax cutting or tax eliminating initiatives in the state?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'll continue to do what I've done literally for the last 18 years. I just need to make sure that the landmines, the literally hundreds of landmines that are in this judge's order, I don't step on any of them. And so that is going to be a tremendous challenge when you consider how many landmines he laid out. But in many ways, it's just a new set of rules. For the last 18 years, I was following the rules that they had laid out for me. Now they said, we've got new rules for you, so I have to follow the new rules now.
Okay. Bob Ferguson said the $2.6 million fine against you is the largest in state history for campaign finance violations. Now, you suggested earlier in our conversation here, you don't have $2.6 million to give to the state of Washington?
I was thinking about just whipping out a checkbook and saying, and who do I make this check made payable to?
Yeah.
I don't know. Can you wait till Monday to cash it? No, I mean, the state knows that I filed for bankruptcy 2 years ago and that I've already lost everything that I'd ever had. So, you know, that whole blood turnip metaphor comes to mind. You know, you can't get blood from a turnip. You can't collect money from somebody that doesn't have it. So that's going to be an interesting aspect of it. It was frankly the part I was the least interested in, part of the ruling. The rest of the stuff is where I was really paying close attention. And when he said, Tim, you're a PAC, you're a continuing committee, and here's all the restrictions on your future First Amendment rights. And then at the end of the ruling, he says, let me make it very clear, though, this is not in any way inhibiting Mr. Iman's First Amendment rights. It's like,
well, what
really?
What they said is that you have personally benefited, this is right from Judge Dixon's ruling, that you have personally benefited economically from the allegations against you, that you were running these initiatives not out of a purity of motive and purpose to reduce everyone's taxes, but because you found these initiatives as a convenient way for you to get lots of donations and you to make some significant money off of it. I mean, that's essentially what he said, right?
That's what he said. That's exactly right. And I guess my response would be, literally for the last 8 years, all I've done is tried to raise money so that I could survive this investigation, litigation, persecution. And so I was asking people, give to my legal defense fund, give to me personally so that I can survive this thing. They ended up reinterpreting money going directly to Tim Iman as somehow a political donation, and when in fact they ended up taking everything that I had just getting to trial. So this idea that I'm sitting on this ton of money that I ended up making and personally benefiting, it's all gone. It all went to paying the lawyers, paying the fines, paying everything, and everything's out. And then during that period of 8 years, we qualified initiatives. I loaned my own money, sold out my retirement fund to get the $30 tabs initiative on the ballot. I mean, the reality is I really believe in these ideas. I put them on the ballot, but during the last 8 years, I was in siege mentality trying to survive financially this onslaught because the AG spent nearly $2 million going after me. I had to raise money from everybody I could in order to pay my lawyers to be able to fight back.
No, the Attorney General, if he wants to bring somebody down, he will spare no expense, and I personally am very aware of that.
You were talking about the AG saying that this was a big record. Literally, nearly $2 million of taxpayer money going after me over the last 8 years. That is more money than all other reporting cases in the last 8 years combined. I mean, it was in full-on onslaught, and if I hadn't asked all these people to help me with my legal defense fund, timdefense.com, please, timdefense.com, if I hadn't done that, I never would have made it to trial. I never would have been able to fight this thing all the way until the end, and basically I just couldn't walk away from the fight. I couldn't just throw up my hands and say, they've overwhelmed me, I can't fight back. I had to ask people for help. And they basically said the help you received, you personally benefited from. I personally benefited from being able to fight back.
I want to know what they're going to do without you, because about 2 weeks ago they announced a massive new health care tax, and they said the reason they need it is because of Tim Iman's $30 car tabs 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
And what I remember about that is, again, your initiative didn't get implemented. Gary Locke went to the legislature and said, hey, this is the will of the people. Why don't we do $30 tabs? So it was a Democrat legislature, a Democrat governor that did the $30 tabs. And here we are 20 years later, and they're still blaming you as to why they need a massive health care tax today.
They have an insatiable tax appetite. They always have. They always will. I'm going to continue to do exactly what I've done over the last 22 years, and that's continue to push ideas that I think resonate with voters. And I think no income tax and no carbon tax are absolutely rock-solid ideas and initiatives to go. I'll sponsor those initiatives. The email update that I'm going to put out today is going to explain this stuff that happened in court today. And I'm going to say, please give to my legal defense fund, because they said I can still continue to raise money for that, timdefense.com. But at the bottom, it's going to say, if you want to help support our initiatives, let's hear from Sid and Larry, and let's find out what they've got to say. And they're going to have, at the bottom, them requesting people donate so that we can do these initiatives, and hopefully I get my loan repaid from the $30 TAPS initiative, where we loaned $500,000 of our own money in order to be able to help get it on the ballot.
Okay. All right. We'll be watching with great interest. All right. We'll stay in touch, Tim. I appreciate you coming on with me today.
Hey, I really, really appreciate it, Dory. It was a weird day. It was a strange day, but frankly, I feel good that at least that 8.5-year chapter of my life is over with, and now we can move forward doing it under the new and improved Tim Eyman-only rules that only apply to me and nobody else. And so we'll just make it work that way.
All right. The ruling yesterday from a judge, Tim Eyman's barred from controlling political committees, but you just heard he's going to stay involved in these initiatives. Tim, I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on. I would love to hear what you have to say. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. And we have lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show. Getting a lot of text messages on the state's plan to take every road and turn them into a toll road with a 2.4 cent per mile charge for every single vehicle. Here is Rima Griffith from the Transportation Commission on how it's going to work.
If you own a car and are driving a car that is below that average MPG, you could be paying as much as 4 to 5 cents a mile today for the use of the roads. If you happen to be driving a car that gets above that 20.5 average MPG, you could be paying as little as a penny a mile. So we see a big swing in terms of equity and how much each driver is paying for the roads today.
That is so weird. It wasn't that long ago that they wanted to reward people who had fuel-efficient cars. In fact, they were giving a federal tax credit if you got electric or hybrid vehicles. Now they want to punish you. It's so weird. They've done a complete 180. If you have a big gas hog, they want to reward you. If you have a fuel-efficient car, they want to punish you. Why? Because nothing is more important than money. Protecting the environment is never of importance to people. Somebody asked, what about if I drive out of state? That's why they want to get the transponder on your car. Because they say you won't be billed for your miles out of state if you drive to California, for example. But if you just go by the odometer reading, they could charge you for that. So that's another sneaky way that they want to get in a transponder in everybody's vehicle. And then another person from the 253 said, what about people from out of state who visit Washington? Won't they have to pay anything if they get rid of the gas tax? Correct. All the burden will fall on people in our state. And then, like I said, there are people in eastern Washington. Man, are they going to get screwed by this. If they have to drive a big, maybe they pull big hay trailers or things like that. And, they have a big diesel truck and they have hundreds or thousands of acres and they're driving their property all the time. Man, they would get smothered by this new tax. And then at the other end of the spectrum, there's one other you have to know about. There's another bill in Olympia that would make it illegal for the state to license any gas or diesel-powered vehicles after the year 2030. again, I'm not making this up. It's a bill in Olympia. It would mandate that every vehicle be electric or hybrid by the year 2030. Now, again, you want to talk about a regressive tax. It's people at the lower end of the economic spectrum who drive older vehicles because generally they can't afford to upgrade to newer vehicles. I'm going to give you the House bill and the Senate bill number on this. It's House Bill 1204, Senate Bill 5256. And again, more than ever, you got to call that legislative hotline and let your voice be heard, because all they're hearing right now are from zealots, from people who want to squeeze every penny of tax money out of you and your family, from people who want to destroy our state's economy by getting rid of all gas and diesel vehicles. I'm sorry, yeah, gas and diesel. Mandating all electric cars starting in the year 2030. The legislative hotline number for you to call is 800-562-6000. Got to write this down. I'll be talking about bills for the next few weeks of this session. And it's up to us, the listeners to this show, you and me, to fight back, because nobody's fighting for us. Nobody's fighting for the working class. Nobody's fighting for the middle class. They just want to jack taxes as much as possible. And if it hurts those people the most, the working class, then so be it. That's just the way it is with our Democrats in Olympia. So that is the bill that's being proposed. No more gas vehicles could be registered in the state. You'd be driving with expired tabs every time you get in your gas-powered vehicle, beginning in the year 2030. They are fundamentally changing the state, and if they get this their way, the state's going to be unrecognizable. It's going to be a radical leftist dystopia. We will check the news for you, and then the Fastest 15 is coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.